The Irish Civil War came to an end in May of 1923, but after the conflict, thousands of anti-treaty IRA and Common Amon members remained incarcerated in various prisons and camps. In the months following the war, those prisoners became increasingly agitated by their continued detention. They eventually joined forces in a mass hunger strike aimed at securing their release. The story of those hunger strikers is one of many explored in the new book, The Atlas of the Irish Civil War. In this report, Ian Kennelly talks to one of the book's editors, historian Dr. Helene O'Keefe.
The men decided that there were 15,000 at that time interned for no reason, good, bad or indifferent, and that they couldn't go on with that forever. And the conditions were very, very bad in both Kilmainham and Mountjoy, and they decided they'd go on a hunger strike and end one way or another.
That was Sheila Humphreys in a clip from the RTE archive speaking about the mass hunger strike of October and November 1923. Humphreys from Limerick was a prominent member of Common Amon who'd been active throughout the War of Independence, working as a courier and as an organiser. She opposed the Anglo-Irish Treaty of 1921 and was arrested in November 1922 when National Army forces raided her family home in Dublin, a raid in which they captured Ernie O'Malley, who had been using the house as both a headquarters and a hideout. Like thousands of others, Humphreys remained a prisoner even after the end of the Civil War when she would, then aged 24, take part in the mass hunger strike. The background to that strike is described by Dr. Helene O'Keefe, who has written about those remarkable events in the Atlas of the Irish Civil War.
Incredibly, in some ways, given that it was the largest hunger strike in Irish history, including about 8,000 prisoners at its height, it's one of the lesser known aspects of the Irish Civil War. Certainly it began 6 months after the formal end of hostilities, but its roots were firmly planted in that conflict, so much so that it's been described as the Civil War's final act. By October 1923, there were about 10,000 Republicans still held in Free State prisons and detention camps across the country, including 86 female prisoners in the North Dublin Union. The figure had actually been closer to about 12,000 in July, but many had been released because of their relative unimportance or because of their willingness to sign a pledge or an undertaking renouncing anti-government militarism.
The Cumann na Gael government under W.T. Cosgrave was wary of a renewal of violence and reluctant to sanction the release of those who had opposed the state through force of arms. On the other side, the prisoners were angered not only by their seemingly indefinite incarceration, but also by the poor conditions in which they were being held. Conditions that, as Helene explains, led a group of prisoners in Mountjoy to begin a mass hunger strike.
The strike began in Mountjoy at midnight on the 13th of October 1923, and it spread sporadically and, importantly, without coordination or direction to other sites of detention. As striker Padraig O'Donnell put it, no one was ordered on it, but no one felt they could stay off it. After 10 days, the Mountjoy strikers were joined by internees in the sprawling Tin Town camp in the Curragh, Hare Park, Gormanstown Park, Newbridge Barracks, Kilkenny, Dundalk and Cork jails, and 51 women in the North Dublin Union. More prisoners in Tralee and Castlebar and on board the prison ship Argenta in Belfast would soon follow suit. The surge of enrolment was exhilarating, but such an uncoordinated mass protest was absolutely unsustainable.
At least some of the prisoners had doubts about their own ability to carry through with the strike. Ernie O'Malley was one, fearing the prolonged hunger that lay ahead. Another prisoner to leave a recollection of those events was Padraig O'Donnell. At the time, O'Donnell from Donegal was 30 years old and a veteran of the War of Independence. He opposed the Anglo-Irish Treaty and was captured in the forecourts at the start of the Civil War, spending the entirety of that conflict as a prisoner. In this clip from the RTE archives, he describes being on hunger strike in 1923.
It didn't seem to have any particular... I was lean and hard to kill and was walking around when other people had collapsed. And the feeling of hunger is a pretty terrible experience. But the extraordinary thing about it was that while one was very hungry and when one fell asleep, you dreamt of feeds. Yet at the same time, when the food which the governor found it necessary to deliver by according to the rules, when that was pushed in the door, you would no more think of taking the food than of eating the leg of the table. It was as though you pulled a steel grid across, and that was that. You can't play act on a hunger strike. You either just do it or you don't.
The anti-treaty IRA hunger strikers were also joined by Cumann na mBan prisoners in the North Dublin Union. They were divided amongst themselves as to whether a hunger strike was justified or likely to succeed. But urged on by Sheila Humphreys and others, over 50 agreed to take part. Humphreys recalls her experiences in a clip from the RTE archives.
Well, after about the 14th or 15th day, we didn't go round much. We stayed in bed a lot, conserving energy, and read books. And above all, read any book that had a lot about food in it. We loved that. And we had one wonderful girl from Cork. I think Marie O'Brien, I think was her name. She wrote down to her sister to send up her best cookery book. She was on hunger strike. And every day at about lunch hour, she'd say, "Now, girls, we're going to have a four-course lunch." And she'd read out first a hors d'oeuvre or soup or something and go through the whole thing.
The women hunger strikers provided the government with a challenge. Many of the Cumann na mBan prisoners, including Humphreys, had gone on hunger strike during the Civil War, winning concessions from a government that was wary of the negative publicity surrounding such cases. In the face of a mass hunger strike, however, the government was unwilling to be seen to grant concessions, and so, according to Humphreys, the prison authorities took an alternate, although duplicitous, approach.
We were 15 days on strike when a message was sent round that we were all to be released. That day, the women were all being released. And they said, what, did we want to order taxis? Did we want to, what time would we like to go? And so on. And my aunt was in with me at the time in the North Dublin Union. And we decided we'd be home in time for the evening meal so that we'd get a taxi at 5 or 6. That was grand. Everything was great. They started making tea in every one of the dormitories and all the different tea, and they asked me. I said, I've been so long now, I think I'd wait till I get home, I'd rather. And my aunt said the same, unfortunately. And at about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, word came back from the gate that only those who had broken their fast would be allowed out. In other words, only those who had taken tea. And of course, nearly all had taken tea. And it was a trick so that they could say in the papers next day, the women have given in. And so here we were, had to go back again. And we were 15 days that time, and we didn't get out till we were 31 days in hunger strike.
By the end of those 31 days, only 8 of the women prisoners remained on hunger strike. A similar pattern was replayed in other prisons and camps as the strike lost momentum.
In most cases, the reality of extreme deprivation quickly eroded resolve. Morale was also sapped by the government's continued commitment to the phased release of prisoners who agreed to sign the pledge, and the absence of that really important cross-sectional support that had buoyed those famous hunger strikers in Mountjoy in April 1920. More and more peeled off, and by mid-November, only a hardcore of about 200 prisoners were still refusing food. Petitions, resolutions, letters fell on deaf ministerial ears. Cosgrave's government was unwilling to yield to the absolutist demands of the prisoners, unwilling to undermine those hardline decisions that they had made during the Civil War. They remained steadfast even after 2 prisoners succumbed to the effects of more than 35 days on hunger strike. Dennis Barry died of heart failure in the Curragh Hospital on the 20th of November, followed 2 days later by Mountjoy striker Andy O'Sullivan.
Their deaths occurred during a period in which the anti-treaty leadership decided to take the remaining protesters off the hunger strike. The deaths of Barry and O'Sullivan may have played a part in that decision, but as Lean O'Keefe explains, other factors were also involved.
An intervention by Cardinal Michael Logue actually proved influential in bringing the protest to a close. In a letter read aloud at Masses in his Archdiocese in Armagh on the 18th of November, he appealed for a compromise. He asked the strikers to abandon the dangerous and unlawful strike and urged the government to release the remaining, quote, untried and unconvicted prisoners. And this eased the decision by the strike leadership who'd been transferred to Kilmainham to call off the strike on humanitarian grounds after 41 days.
The strike ended without any guarantees from the government that the prisoners would be released. Ernie O'Malley, who had been moved from Mountjoy to Kilmainham during his 41-day strike, stated that we had been defeated again. Yet the government, having broken the strike, authorised more prisoner releases in a process that would continue into the following year.
In the weeks before Christmas, all of the women and most of the male prisoners were released in phases. And this was the final phase, the government insisted, of a process that had begun 6 months before, and as such, reflective of the futility of the Republican last stand. But the requirement to sign the form was quietly abandoned, and the speed of the releases really spoke to the official urgency to clear the prisons, to return to a kind of a normality.
According to the Atlas of the Irish Civil War, at least six more prisoners died as a result of the effects of hunger strike in late 1923 and early 1924. And sources such as the Military Service Pensions Files speak of a longer-term physical and psychological effect for many others. The hunger strikers may have failed to achieve their goals, but the sheer scale of the protest provided ample proof of the animosities that divided the Free State.
That was Ian Kennelly reporting there from Cork, where he learned about the mass hunger strike of 1923. That's one of the many subjects documented in the Atlas of the Irish Civil War, recently published by Cork University Press and edited by Helene O'Keefe, John Crowley, Donal O'Driscoll, John Borgonovo and Mike Murphy.